House will come to order. Do you have any privileges of the floor? Representative Hastert.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Members of the 58th, I got some fantastic news a little while ago. I know you guys were instrumental in helping me welcome not only my daughter, but her unit in Iraq to the Wyoming House. And I just got a call, and my daughter is on the ground in the United States, and she'll be home shortly.
There's still apparently someone missing. Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
You may. Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, before starting to tell you a little bit about Sheridan County, I'd like to introduce one of our county commissioners, who's a new county commissioner, but who's been in Sheridan County for years and years, and has known a lot of people and raised a lot of people's kids because he was formerly with the Game and Fish, and so he traveled around and kept an eye on all the kids. And that's Terry Crown. Terry, would you stand up, please? Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to go exactly according to the script, but I won't vary too much because I know you don't want it to be a Chamber of Commerce ad. But my wife was raised in Kemmer, and we met in Laramie, and in 1972 we moved to Sheridan, and we thought we'd arrived at the land of milk and honey. There were, when you compare Sheridan to Kemmer and Laramie, there were apple trees growing in the barrow ditches. That year the wild plums were set on real heavy, and there were big red wild plums all over the place. And the cattle were fat, and Laramie County is just one of the most special places to live. We lie on the east side of the Bighorns, and because of that, the Bighorns are kind of like a huge windbreak. And Sheridan is blessed by having this climate that isn't particularly windy, protected by the mountains. There were early settlers came into the east side of the Bighorns because the grass was so good and so deep in those valleys. And that's why the Native Americans fought so hard to keep that country as long as they could. Of course, they pretty well whipped up on the soldiers at the Little Bighorn, but before then, there's quite a battle at the Rosebud, one of the representatives from Sheridan has some family ranch country in that area. That's into Montana, but Crook and his army came down out of that battle after they'd been pretty well, the Sioux Nation had pretty well scooted them out of there, and they came down to where the Little Goose and Big Goose River converge in Sheridan. And they fed that entire army on cutthroat trout that they caught out of that stream. And then later on in the 1880s, the first cabin and the first settlers came into Sheridan, and it's been growing ever since. It's a great place for recreation with the mountains there. Right now there's all kinds of skiing and snow machining. You go up on the mountains, you go up to, Sheridan sits at about 3,500 to 4,000 feet. And so then you go up on the mountains and you're up between 7,000 and 8,000 feet, and there's a lot of heavy timber. But then it's scattered big open grasslands up on the top. And that's why there's such good recreation up there and good ag use of the land in the summer up there. They can graze a lot of cows up there. Our valuation has gone up. It used to be that school district two that I was in, or number one that I was involved with for a while, is $1 mil of tax would raise $15,000. Well, that's kind of changed a little bit in that school district, and things have gone up. And the county valuation now is $380,000. Some of the big employers we have in Sheridan County are the VA hospital, and people from all over, veterans from all over come to there. The railroad has of course, is running some coal through that part of the bringing it out of the Gillette area and on up into Montana and then running east and west. School districts, of course, are big. We have a great medical community in Sheridan. Sheridan's always been known as kind of a retirement community. It used to be a retirement community for ranchers in the eastern, northeastern part of Wyoming and the southern part of Montana. Back when we had winters that were winters, whenever they would want to retire, they'd retire into Sheridan. And it just had lots of things for people to do. And they would settle in with their friends. So that's just kind of a few highlights on Sheridan County. And come visit us when you have a chance.
Thank you, Representative Landon. Representative Miller? Oh, Representative McComey, my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're going to kind of tag team this. There's going to be Representative Goggles, Representative Phelps, Representative Miller, and myself. We're going to do a little slide presentation as we do this. We're going to present to you Fremont County. And before we get into this, I'd like to introduce you to one of our county commissioners, Vice Chairman Lanny Applegate from Fremont County.
Thank you, President McComey, and welcome to both commissioners to watch the House.
Mr. Speaker, I apologize. I should have asked for privilege of the floor.
And you may have it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fremont County is county number 10. It has five county commissioners. Doug Thompson, who is the chairman. Lanny Applegate, who you just met, is our vice chairman. Pat Hickerson, Gary Jennings, and Jane Adamson. And Fremont County is the second largest county in the state with an area of 9,394 square miles. We are fourth in population with 35,914 residents. 51% of the county population lives within the six incorporated communities. They are Riverton with 9,310, Lander with 6,867, Dubois 962 people, Shoshone 635, Hudson 407, and Pavilion 165. The rest lived in rural Fremont County in the unincorporated areas of Jeffrey City, Lysite, Atlantic City, Ethity, Fort Washakie, and Arapaho. Of our 35,914 residents, 19.7 of them are American Indians. Jeffrey City was one of the larger communities in the state in the 1980s, approaching nearly 5,000 people as a producer of uranium. It is now mostly vacant. I'm going to talk a little bit here about my community of Lander. Lander has numerous varieties of things, but we were hard hit when U.S. Steel closed, uranium mines closed, and the mineral industry tanked. At one time, we had over 462 vacant houses in Lander. We started what we call the vigorous retiree effort, trying to recruit retiring service people, CEOs, people like that. And now we are one of these people that complain about our taxes. Hard to find an empty house or a place to rent and land it. But it took a long time We have one of the private hospitals in Wyoming, 108-bed facility. Part of that's been converted into extended care, psychiatric units, some secure units for the police department if they ever need it. We also are the home, the international headquarters of the Wyoming Outdoor Leadership School. They don't call it Wyoming, but we do. And they're all over the world. They've trained astronauts. A lot of special forces come up there. You learn how to live up in the mountains on your own, how to go around. They've really grown. They're worldwide. We live within 5 to 10 minutes. You can drive up and see Mountain Sheep. The rise and sink for the entire river, the Poposia, north fork of the, or the middle fork of the Poposia, disappears into the ground. Comes out a half mile downstream with the biggest fish you've ever seen in your life, and you can't catch them. It's a state park, it's Canyon State Park. So we're pretty proud of our little community there, and now I think I'm going to turn this over to Representative Miller, and he can talk to you a little about it. He's also running the PowerPoint up there that shows you a little bit about our area.
All right. Thank you, Representative McComey. I'm going to talk a little bit about the assessed valuation and the minerals and start a little bit about ag. Our assessed valuation is nearly $700 million, the majority of which is oil and gas production, followed by agriculture and tourism. Natural gas production is increasing throughout the county, and the ag and tourism are both stable. To give you an idea, this is a scene near Lysite with the Owl Creeks in the background with an oil rig up there. This is a close-up of one of the exploration rigs in the Lysite area. Beautiful country. I know some fine representatives even from Natrona County that come from this neck of the woods. This is what oil and gas production has been doing in Fremont County. As you can see, that's from 1979, but you look at the last third of that chart there, you know, it's probably doubling every 5 or 6 years of natural gas production. So that's great. Another commodity we have and had had a lot of production on in the past is uranium. And just to give you a little bit of background on that, this is a mine out in the Gas Hills, a huge open pit mine. They moved more dirt there than it took to build the Panama Canal. Representative Phelps Ranch happens to sit amongst a bunch of that. But the point is this is a pit at Lucky Mac. What it took 500 people 30 years ago to mine 1 million pounds a year. In Wyoming, we do with water wells now. We can mine 1 million pounds a year with 75 people using water wells from the surface. And this is the new technology in Wyoming, that if we have uranium production come back, it'll be this high. Ag, a few pictures here, and I'm going to turn it on over to Pat, I believe.
Thank you, Representative Miller. I want to say a few things about our transportation. We have local airports in Lander, and Lander's airport also serves the hospital there for air ambulances. We also have a local airport in Dubois, and the Riverton Regional Airport, which services most of Fremont County. We also have the Fremont County Public Transportation. It's called the Windowless Transit Authority. It runs buses for senior citizen centers, for Head Start centers, and for public transportation. There are 8 school districts, as you know, many of you know, in Fremont County. There's the Lander School District, the Riverton School District, the Wind River School District, the Shoshone, Dubois, and Wyoming Indian, Fort Washakie, 38, and Arapahoe School District. There's also the BIA, St. Stephen's Indian School, located at St. Stephen's Wyoming near Riverton, and also Central Wyoming College, which is located in Riverton, and services all of Fremont County, and also includes Pecan County. Public safety is addressed by the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, that provide patrol and detention facilities in coordination with the municipal police departments in Riverton, Lander, and Shoshone. An interconnected system, municipal and local fire departments provide fire protection, also for the Windsor Indian Reservation as well. We have rural fire departments that provide fire protection for our rural areas. Fremont County operates a juvenile and adult drug court with a substance abuse problem. These are aided by jail-based treatment programs. They call it the Crisis Center Riverton, that takes the intoxicated persons to the Crisis Center rather than to jail for detoxification. The Wind River Range is the Continental Divide in Fremont County, as well as the Elk Creeks North in Fremont County. Let me say a few things about some of the events that take place in Fremont County. World renowned is the Land of One-Shot Antelope Hunt that's always held in the fall. There are other world-famous hunts like the Antelope Hunt from Du Bois, Jefferson City. There's the Red Desert. There's hunting, fishing, rock climbing, camping, and many other recreational pursuits. At the center of Fremont County is the Wind River Indian Reservation. The Wind River Indian Reservation is the only reservation, Indian reservation in Wyoming. It's 2.2 to 6.8 million acres. And that's about 3,500 square miles. And it is bound by the north, on the north by the Elk Creek Range, and on the west by the Wind River Range. The Wind River Reservation is located in west central Wyoming, in Fremont and part of Hot Springs County. The Wind River Indian Reservation was originally established by the Fort Bridger Treaty of 1863, which included 44 million acres at that time in Colorado, Utah, Idaho, and Wyoming. The Wind River Indian Reservation is now home to the two tribes, the Eastern Band of Shoshone, and the northern band of Arapahoes. The Shoshone were the original inhabitants of the reservation, which was established solely for that purpose. In 1878, the Arapahoes were settled on the Wind River Reservation as hostiles by the U.S. government. The reservation currently is home to about 2,500 Eastern Shoshone and 5,700 northern Arapahoes. The two tribes have been federally recognized by the United States government and operate separate tribal governments and separate democratic elections. The oldest community on the Wind River Indian Reservation is Fort Washington, which was originally called Fort Brown. The name was changed in 1878 to honor the great chief Washakie. Fort Washakie is home to the Eastern Shoshone tribe and to the Eastern Shoshone Business Council. Each of the St. Stephens and Arapaho are the centers of the Northern Arapaho tribe. Unemployment on the Wind River Reservation is right around 55%. And I will turn this next part over to you, the good representative, Mr. Shoshone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And in Fremont County, we are blessed with beautiful natural resources, as the previous representatives have mentioned. We've got rich soil and a lot of water resources. We also have a great number of wide open spaces. All of that goes together to support a thriving agricultural industry in the county. Most of it's related to livestock. Most of the farming is related to livestock feed. We have cattle, sheep, and horses. A lot of them in the county, they graze on the irrigated lands in the wintertime and out on the public and private and state lands in the summertime, grazing lands. The irrigation provides water to grow crops like hay, corn, barley, beans, sugar beets. All of those things are grown in the county. Some of the recent successes in Fremont County, which are related to natural resources, are they've developed a mushroom plant in Shoshone that raises mushrooms. It's a state-of-the-art, world-class facility that's built there. It uses inmate labor in the prison farm. So it fits real well with that facility there in Fremont County, and it provides opportunities for those inmates to learn good work skills and be prepared for when they eventually go back into society. A couple of other things that's going on in Shoshone. They've developed a railroad car and manufacturing and repair facility there. That's an up-and-coming business there, and we're real happy with that. There's a gas plant at Lost Gavin. That's a huge operation. That's another world-class facility that we have in Fremont County. And not a gas. It's purified and then marked it there. It's a sour gas, but in these are tremendous wells out there. There's only about five wells that supply that plant, and it's a huge amount of gas for the country. Also in Shoshone, you can get a malt there. We have the best malts in the state. One of the biggest problems facing the county, and it's because of the way our county is laid out and spread out, all the numerous communities that were mentioned that we have in the county, is our landfill issues. It's how to take care of all of that with such a wide flung population in that many communities, and a lot of them are rural residents too. And I'll turn it back to Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one thing that we didn't overlook because we were saving it is that a large, large part of the Continental Snowmobile Trail is in Fremont County. It's just straight in Fremont County, goes out into Sublette, those areas, back into Fremont County, all the way up to get all the way into the park. And we're very proud of that because it's one of the highlighted things in the industry now, one of the places to go and one of the places to be. And in closing, Fremont County Commissioners and our citizens in Fremont County, thank you for the opportunity to present. Thank you very much.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For all those ag folks out there, I want to know if Representative Phelps is handling this iron correctly here in this photo. And I got one more. Dell wanted me to put a couple of recent pictures of a couple of us in here. Dale wanted everyone to see that he had hair at one time. Thank you.
Thank you, representatives from Fremont County. We've certainly reached a new level. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. House has resolved itself into committee of the whole. And Representative Samuelson.
Committee of the whole, please come to order. Hold. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One announcement with the general file lineup. We are going to put Senate File 92 at the bottom of the list and Senate File 172 at the bottom of the list.
It's going to be a bitter pill for some people, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. First bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 2. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, introduced by Senator Larson, and joint resolution relating to public lands, providing for the establishment of a state special reserve account.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Phelps. Chairman Phelps.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate Joint Resolution Number 2. There is a standing committee amendment, but I will wait until after the explanation of the bill by the representative from Laramie County.
Representative Dillaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Joint Resolution 2 has great similarities to House Joint Resolution 1 in that it talks about the state special reserve account, which House Bill 25 we hope is proceeding through on the Senate side. Let me just tell you some of the differences between HJ1 and SJ2. On the bottom of page 2, in this particular joint resolution, it says all income from investments shall be deposited by the state treasurer in the general fund on an annual basis. HJ1 had the and the income staying within the fund. It also, under HJ1, we took this language out. The legislature may also specify by law conditions and terms under which monies in the accounts may be loaned to political subdivisions of the state. Any such loan of money shall require a two-thirds vote as provided in this section. All repayments of any funds so loaned, including interest payments, shall be deposited in the account from which the loan was made. That, those lines were not in HJ1. And then a change when this came from the Senate on line 8, the Senate changed, the original bill was 10%, could be put into the special reserve account, now called the Legislative Stabilization Reserve Account. Originally it was 10%. The Senate changed it to 20%. So that you would have approximately $2.6 billion. You could have approximately $2.6 billion in the fund. That's a change. As I said, it started out at 10%, went to 20%. The House Joint Resolution is at 10%. You have to move the Standing Committee Amendment. So now we're at the Standing Committee Amendment, which the good representative and chairman of the Appropriations Committee is going to move.
Chairman Phil?
Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 2. And I would return that explanation back to the representative from Miami County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll notice on the Standing Committee Amendment that page 1, line 1, this is some wording that LSO has put in for the constitutional amendments. The important one is page 3, line 8. Now, instead of originally 10%, then 20%, now we're down to 5%. 5% would be in the vicinity of 3/4 of $1 billion, $750 million. And again, on page 4, line 5, we've changed the 20% to 5%. So that's the bill. I'd ask for your favorable consideration on Standing Amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 2.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, we have talked about Senate Joint Resolution 2. I've gone over the differences between the House Joint Resolution and this one, and I'd ask for your consideration on due pass.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Phillips' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution number 2 do pass. Please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate Joint Resolution 2 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our committee for our consideration is Joint Resolution 5. Reed Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution number 5, introduced by Senator Coe, a joint resolution recognizing financial education's value to the state of Wyoming and its citizens.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Chairman Wassenberger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution number 5 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. This resolution comes to the sponsors from a organization in Douglas, Wyoming of young people called Can Do. the CANDU group approached the sponsors and asked us to carry this resolution for them. What the resolution talks about is financial education in our schools. As you know, we have two areas where we seek to try and make students proficient in financial education, and that is in a class that's typically called economics. And several years back, we also allowed business courses to be used for that econ class. What the students wanted is exactly what you see before you today. It has not been amended. There was an editorial in favor of this resolution in the one statewide newspaper today. The resolution talks about how difficult young people have, how much difficulty young people have with managing their money and maintaining a successful bank account. If there are any questions, I would stand for them at this time.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Representative Miley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to the sponsor of the bill. Will this interfere with the regular classroom that is scheduled? Because it looks like we're adding one more commitment to the school district to provide this education. And I know I've heard so many of the teachers complain they've got too many things already to educate. Thank you.
Chairman Wasserberg.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe this costs any money. But honestly, to a good representative from Laramie County, the resolution is very permissive. It does not require any additional work within the school system. In fact, the standards and proficiencies that we already have address many of the issues that these students are talking about. So I don't believe that that would be the case.
Is there any more discussion? Ready for question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Wasserberger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution 5 do pass, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate Joint Resolution 5 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 132. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 132, introduced by Senator Mockler, an act relating to the Wyoming Criminal History Record Act regarding criminal background checks.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 132 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which I move at this time, and I would like to hand the bill over to the good representative from Campbell County.
Representative Ludlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 132 is a bill which will allow criminal background checks for firefighters, ambulance attendants, and emergency response teams. Please allow me to tell you a little bit about the bill and then briefly explain why the bill is needed. The bill is in two sections. Section 719-106 is the section which allows criminal history records to be disclosed to the appropriate agency. What happens in these types of disclosures is the agency sets up a list of criteria. For example, does the applicant have a history of sex offenses or criminal arson? The reply from the criminal history agency is the person has an offense that meets your criteria, or the person does not have an offense which meets your criteria. The second section of the bill, 719-201, rewrites and clarifies the old 719-201. The statute ensures that as a condition of employment, upon request of an employing agency, a person shall submit to fingerprinting. The statute makes submission mandatory upon request, or otherwise people would simply say no upon the request for fingerprints and there would be nothing the agency could do. As a condition of membership, the criminal background check should be required. The reasons we need this bill.
one has to only go as far as the evening news, unfortunately, to understand the need for an arson history background check on firefighters. Hiring arsonists as firefighters is a bad idea. And this bill would give fire departments the tools to prevent such hiring. Similar news stories talk about emergency medical technicians. We need to give our emergency response agencies the tools to ensure that when we are the most vulnerable, the person who knocks at the door is of the highest ethical character. Two types of people are attracted to emergency medical services: those who want to help and those who are predators. This bill gives our emergency medical services the tools they need to sort out the predators, who are very few, from the persons who want to help. I urge you to give our medical services, our emergency medical services, this tool to ensure that we do not allow predators and criminals to infiltrate our emergency services.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are there any? Are you ready for question? Question being called. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that Senate file 132 do pass, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate file 132 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 64. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 64, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to correctional officers, certification for them.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Lannan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 64 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which I move at this time. And I would yield the floor to the good representative from Raleigh.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was brought to us by the Department of Corrections to the Judiciary Committee. And what it is post-certification for correctional officers. And what they want to do is they want to have 280 hours of schooling and raise the standards to be a professional correctional officer. All newly hired staff would attend the first 40 hours of pre-service regardless of assignment. All new hired staff would have daily contact with the inmate population, would also attend the next 80 hours of pre-service regardless of assignment. All newly hired staff within the correctional officer certification series would also spend an additional 160 hours of pre-service training for a total of 280 hours. During their one-year probationary period, the staff would be required to demonstrate core competencies under the direction and supervision and mentor field training officer or supervisor in order to be approved by the Wyoming Department of Correction for admission to post-certification. Prior to being placed into positions requiring the following specialized skills, staff would receive an additional training through on-the-job programs: 2.0 hours of fingerprinting, 31.5 hours of firearm training, 40 hours of substance abuse training provided to required staff. And they're also going to cover constitutional law, fire safety, and workplace safety. And I'll get into the bill now. I'll just give you a summary of what they wanted to do. But if you got the bill in front of you, go down to Section 1. And that's qualifications for employment as a correctional officer, termination of employment, certification without compliance with the requirements of this section. Within 15 days after the appointment, termination, resignation, or death, of any correctional officer or certified correctional officer, written notice thereof shall be given to the commission by the employing agency. A state agency or other persons authorized by law to appoint correctional officers in this state shall not appoint any person as a correctional officer on or after July 1st, 05, who does not meet the following qualifications. The person shall be a United States citizen, be an adult, and submit to fingerprinting and a search of local, state, and national fingerprint files to determine whether the applicant has a criminal record with a history of the responses sent to the commission. Not have been convicted of any crime for which the applicant could have been punished by imprisonment in a federal or state penitentiary, unless his conviction is reversed or annulled. He receives a pardon. He must hold a high school diploma or equivalent, and he must have a GED or higher. Be of good moral character as determined by a background investigation. And then it goes on down to, I'll go down to 7 to speed this along a little bit. But he must be free of any physical, emotion, or mental condition which might adversely affect the applicant's performance as a correctional officer. Physical condition shall be evaluated by a person licensed to practice medicine and by application of a standardized physical fitness performance test, as specified by the hiring agency. This is very important. They're going to give him a mental, an emotional, and mental condition shall be evaluated by a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist. He must successfully pass an oral interview, examination, and other pre-employment examinations specified by a hiring agency. And then, a person shall not receive an original appointment as a certified correctional officer or hold an appointment to a firm on a permanent basis as a certified correctional officer unless the person has been awarded a certificate by the director attesting his satisfactory completion of an approval of correctional officer basic training program and has demonstrated the core competencies of a correctional officer as defined by the employing agency in cooperation with the commission. And then it goes on page 4 and 5 to explain some of these hiring procedures that they have to do. Over on page 6, line 15, a person who is convicted of a felony after his appointment as a correctional officer is ineligible for continued employment as a correctional officer. If the person has been certified under this section, his certification shall be automatically revoked on the date of his conviction. The director shall notify the person and the person's employing agency upon revocation of certification under this subsection as denied by the commission. And then going over to page 7, it's more language. And then line 20, section K, upon receipt of the Department of Family Services a certified copy of an order from a court to withhold, suspend, or otherwise restrict a certificate issued by the commission shall notify the party named in the court order and the employing agency of the withholding, suspension, or restriction of the certificate in accordance with the terms of the court order. No appeal under the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act shall be allowed for a certificate withheld, suspended, or restricted. And we asked the question of just what does that mean? And that's if an officer has been accused of domestic violence or if he's behind on his child support and gets hauled into court, they're going to take that into consideration. Any person who has been employed on a permanent basis as a correctional officer for 5 years and who is employed as a correctional officer by the Wyoming Department of Corrections on July 6, 2006 shall be certified as a certified correctional officer by the director without having complied with subsections to this section. The Wyoming Department of Corrections may establish qualifications and standards for hiring and training that exceed the minimum set by the commission. And then this goes over to definitions. A certified correctional officer means a person who is employed by the Wyoming Department of Corrections on a full-time basis to care for, supervise, control, and maintain custody of persons confined in Wyoming Department of Corrections institutions and who has completed all requirements for certification as a correctional officer under this act. And then it just goes down on page 9 to more definitions. And on page 10, which dropped down to line 11, the commission shall establish course requirements and continuing education requirements for correctional officer training. With the approval of the commission, the director may inspect and approve peace officer and correctional officer training academies, issue certificates of approval to academics, and revoke approval of certificates. And then there's seven different things that they have to do on page 11. I'll let you read that yourself. And this is about the extent of it. Like I say, they have 80 hours training now, and what the Department of Corrections wants to do is raise this up to 280 hours and make these correctional officers more professional. And this bill passed out of Judiciary Committee 9-0. Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions.
Representative Miley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question of the sponsor of this bill. Are these correctional officers, are they now eligible for the law enforcement retirement benefits? Are they eligible now, or will they be eligible after they have become certified?
Representative Bagley.
I'm not sure. Chairman Landon.
Representative Corbett.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple of questions also on the bill. I just wanted clarification. Will this bill, in essence, be making correctional officers certified peace officers in the state of Wyoming? That was one of my questions. And then I just wanted to make sure on page 2 that we weren't we're not inadvertently including under on line 8 where it says a state agency or any other person authorized by law to appoint correctional officers in this state shall not appoint any person, and then it goes on to list. So is that also then now including our county sheriffs who also appoint correctional officers in their detention centers? Or is this bill strictly limited to correctional officers that are hired by the Department of Corrections? So those are my two questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It would be my understanding.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right now, it's my understanding that the correctional officers, it's my memory that the correctional officers are not in the Wyoming retirement system for police officers. There has been some interest inside that group in getting into the retirement system, as you can imagine. And there was no bill brought forth this session to advocate that. The good representative from Hot Springs County had two questions. One of them had to do with the on page 2 had to do with the state agency or other person. It's my understanding that that the correctional, let's see,
I need to look into that a little bit more. We were not intending to bring in the county or city jail individuals to require that they have correctional officers. The goal of the bill was primarily to increase the professional and training experience that those who were working in the state facilities have. And I can't remember your second question.
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if this bill would make correctional officers certified peace officers in the state. And then while I'm up here, I do have another follow-up question, and I'm wondering what the fiscal impact of this is going to be to the Department of Corrections.
Representative McComey. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I do believe that the corrections people are a member of the law enforcement retirement system. And the answer to the question about the county requires now that their corrections officers go to the academy in Douglas and be trained, and they have to pass the physicals, and they have a different system that they work in also. And they are also, I might add, members of the retirement system. So you've got two different sets of correctional people. They are members of the same system. They do have different types of post requirements, as far as I know. And there's some law enforcement people here on the floor that can probably clear it up. Further discussion on the standing committee amendment? You've heard the motion. Representative Baggin.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the question from the lady from Hot Springs County, I think there's a difference there. There's a level going through the school there that a correctional officer will not have the same authority as a regular police officer. Their authority will be within the Department of Corrections and within the Department of Prison System, although they will get some training from the police academy in Douglas, but they will not be equal as far as peace officers.
Representative Watt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that Representative from Fremont County is correct. Correctional officers are in that law enforcement retirement system. The police departments and sheriff's offices are. I believe we did that in 2002. This bill here will give correctional officers the same training as sheriff's office detention officers. Pretty much exactly the same type of training. We require a professional standard by sheriff's office detention officers. We need to require it of our state correctional officers, and that's what this bill will do. Yes, there is a lot of cross-training. Correctional officers will have some law enforcement training. Will they have arrest powers? No. They won't have arrest powers. This just addresses training.
Representative Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to go over the standing committee amendment real quickly.
Very good.
Primarily what it did was it took out some of the language that said that the correctional officer could have been convicted of a felony. There was no such thing as one that's annulled, so that was deleted. And also, after talking with different ones who were giving testimony, we didn't want anyone who had received a pardon to be able to become a correctional officer. Then, down further on the page, we changed the amount of time that a person, had they worked as a correctional officer, they could be certified as a correctional officer after 5 years of experience rather than after 10 years of experience. That also was the request of the director of the Department of Corrections. On page 10, there were a couple other additions where we were requiring them to adopt rules and regulations. And then we added language about the procedure for denial and renewal and suspension and so on of the certification.
Representative Bagby.
Another question to the lady from Hot Springs County, the representative. In my notes, I've got some fiscal notes here, and it looks like the funding for the year 06 is going to be about $244,000, and then 07 will be about $242,000, and 08 will be about $362,000. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman, but I think that this money is already allocated within the Department of Corrections budget.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I believe just the next year is allocated, and just this fiscal year, and not next fiscal year. The feeling was that the importance of having a trained workforce is well worth the expense.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any more discussion? You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 64 do pass. Please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 64 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 170. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 170, introduced by Senator Boggs, an act relating to controlled substances and penalties.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 170 do pass. There is no standing committee amendment, and I turn the handling of the bill over to the good representatives from the land of milk and honey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Beautiful land. I'm trying to space in some easy bills, Mr. Chairman, with the others. This is one of them, Senate File 170, Controlled Substances, with regard to penalties, and it's an amendment of 357-1031. Going to page 2, the explanation of it, of what is underlined there, being added to the statute, is that when treatment is court-ordered because an offense involves substance abuse, the abuse of a controlled substance, then the term of probation may go beyond the maximum term for that offense for the purpose of treatment. But regardless, no more than 2 years total. The reason for this really has more to do with methamphetamine and the new scourge drug that we are dealing with in society, in which length of treatment, but that's not solely for that, but it certainly applies to methamphetamine. Length of treatment is the key for treatment. And regardless of modality within certain means which are productive and effective for treatment, it's more important that the duration of treatment, rather than the differential approach taken, happens. So this will allow for the treatment as needed to go beyond the normal length of the penalty for the offense. And it's as simple as that. I stand open to questions, and I ask for your support of this bill.
Representative Dirks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is another time when I miss our former colleague from Campbell County, who had worked on both the defense and prosecution sides of these elements. And many of you will remember 2 or 3 years ago when an amendment, a bill similar to this came over, extending probation for all crimes and offenses. And the good representative convinced many of us that that was not the proper course to take. And so now we have kind of a modified version of this coming back. And I don't perceive it as such a simple bill. I think it probably is indicative of a particular slant that our society has taken toward crimes and offenses that we may want to take a step back and analyze before we rubber stamp it so quickly. Many of you have probably seen some recent news stories over the last year that polygraph technology is advancing. No longer is polygraph technology just going to measure your pulse rate. There have been significant advances in polygraph technology that measure one's voice. It's kind of amazing, really, about what the voice of a person knowingly telling an untruth will do. There are technologies advancing about retina images and what happens to the eye when a person is knowingly telling a mistruth. And just since the session started, maybe some of you saw yet another advance in this area where different parts of the brain are active when a person is knowingly telling a mistruth. Well, what does all this have to do with anything? Well, we've just spent about the last hour talking about some specific background checks we're going to do for people, first providers, or people that work in law enforcement. We've talked about not wanting arsonists as firefighters. And when we get a bill like this that is essentially extending probation, not for that probation officer to really examine whether an individual is a threat to society at all, but merely whether that individual is living a different lifestyle. All the probation officer has to do with this is check the urinalysis. And if the urinalysis comes up hot, we're once again expanding our prison population. So this bill really goes a lot farther than it may seem. And for those who say, well, our society is never going to jump into polygraph examination, all we have to do is look at to our reaction to 9/11 and how quickly on the federal level we were so willing to throw out Fourth Amendment protections. We were so willing to let government come in and do warrantless searches. We were so willing to let government know exactly what we were reading in the library, exactly what we were doing on the internet. When it comes down to it, if a person really has terroristic ambitions, or if a person really has ambitions of sexual assault on another, or really the crime that haunts so many of us, predatory endeavors toward children in a sexual manner, what about these polygraph tests? How soon will we be willing to allow those sorts of things? It wouldn't take too much, because a lot of the American public will look at that and say, you know something? We might just want to polygraph these people just to see if they have terroristic ambitions, ill motives toward children, genuine malintent toward their fellow man, not simply living an alternative lifestyle. And when these occasions come up, I think we'll look back at bills like this and see that they were nearly archaic. I would urge our body to either reject this today or at least look at some subsequent amendments to deal with individuals who are really committing violent crimes and acts toward others.
Representative Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 58th, well, this is going to shock some of you, but as a prosecutor, and the guy that again gets tagged with Mr. Felony or more time, I don't like this provision. Let me tell you why. I would hope that somebody that comes in front of the court or that I prosecute for a first-time possession, if we cannot craft something that is helpful and beneficial in a 12-month period for a misdemeanor, the whole system has failed. And to be quite blunt, this is going to explode the number of cases that I personally and the people like me to prosecute these cases are going to have to follow. Because I do believe that, as the good representative from Niobrara County has pointed out, judges generally, and again, I do like judicial discretion, but they are going to see this as a sea change and how the legislature thinks, and that maybe we need to get more and more of these first-time users stronger and stronger treatment, which means they're under probation not only for 6 months, 12 months, now possibly up to 2 years for a misdemeanor, particularly a first-time misdemeanor. I think you'll be hearing from me and people like the good representative from Teton County will be coming back to do this for a living, saying you have exploded our caseload and we're gonna have a lot more problem. We're going to come back here and ask for a lot more money. So I would be very, very cautious about this, because the numbers of people that are going to fall underneath this is extraordinarily high. I mentioned to you one time before in regards to the number of misdemeanor cases that I'm tracking currently right now within 180 days, which means the constitutional time from the time they're charged to the time the case is either resolved or goes to trial without a waiver is 180 days. My misdemeanor caseload alone in my office is 2,000 plus cases, misdemeanors. So you could look at this, if I were able to resolve those 2,000 misdemeanors in 180 days, in theory, the judge could extend those probationary periods by another year. And that would just absolutely break our office. And as I came to this floor and asked to have our office staff restored to the status quo that we were this time last year, and we didn't get it, again, I caution you very, very carefully to not adopt this in its current form.
Representative Eichel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really do have comments on this, and perhaps another way to explain it and another way to emphasize what this is limited to. I've used the example of methamphetamine, which is a horrendous drug, which is one of those drugs and definitely is one that requires a length of treatment that is sufficient in order to get beyond the effects of it, and the brain changes and the personality changes intellectually, cognitively, and behaviorally that happen, which dispose a person to criminal activity and to having offenses for which they are subject to traditionally to a penalty. This is for the treatment side only. We're talking about one single topic. We're talking about the need for treatment and the need for treatment to be of an adequate duration that it can be efficacious for a person. We've had it minimized in terms of testimony referring to misdemeanors. We've had it maximized in terms of terrorism. This has only to do with not increasing the penalty phase for the sake of penalty, for the sake of sticking it to the person longer and longer and longer. It has to do with allowing for a period of time in which efficacious treatment might take place. I hope I've said that enough. It is not in order to extend the monitoring period for the use of controlled substances. It is not got anything to do with terrorists. I believe it is not an archaic thing, and it will not end up having been an archaic thing. It is a forward thing, which is addressing a very special situation in our society. And it only has one use. The judge may do this. The judge may extend the period of time because the person is in treatment for something that is going to have a great potential for changing the person back to what that person was. There is a change of a person in the case of meth, at least. And it is up to us. What is it that you want? You want these people to possibly have, I know it's a hammer, it's something that is allowed for them to have it be extended so they can have what they need, and they might be unlikely to achieve that without this. Also, it is important that our drug courts have enough time to deal efficaciously with people, and it's for that purpose. So I still stand for more discussion if that's what the House would like, or your decision on this matter. Thank you.
Representative Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hadn't really thought about this one very much until I heard from a good representative from Niobrara, and he raised some very good points that I hadn't thought of. I think this looks like an amendment that doesn't do much, but potentially this could be sending a message to our judges that the legislature has decided to have a huge policy shift. Judges, and in particularly prosecutors, try to read into what the legislature's doing. And potentially they could read into this that what the legislature is actually wanting us to do as prosecutors and as judges is to start giving more probation time rather than jail time. And as one of those type of prosecutors that I actually like giving jail time. Because it serves a purpose. You know, we talk so much about treatment and whatnot. I can tell you, most people are not very serious about treatment until you stick them in jail for a little while. And then all of a sudden they start wising up to what the situation they are in. Probation doesn't always wake them up. Jail certainly does. I'm concerned that this is sending a message that maybe, and I know the good representative from Sheridan was not by intending to send this message, I'm concerned that's the message being sent. Also, by doing this, be prepared for next session. I think we'll be coming back with wanting quite a few more probation officers because this is going to be impacting their caseloads considerably, and I think they're going to want increases. So just be aware of that if you do vote for this, that you know be prepared to vote for that in the budget also.
Representative Alden.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a question of the sponsor. Is this bill, will it address, for example, if the person is at a 24-month meth treatment center and their probation is 13 months, upon the 13 months, their probation has run its course, but their treatment hasn't. Therefore, they could foreseeably walk out of the treatment center after the state's invested 13 months of money into their life, correct? I mean, they could walk out of the treatment center without any repercussion and without any way to mandate they stay in treatment without a probation revocation. Is this correct?
Representative Reichel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that is probably more likely to be the case than any other situation, that this would be a sort of a treatment that requires an intensive approach for a long enough period of time in a protected situation that they would stay there until it could have made the change that we hope for our citizens.
Representative White.
Mr. Chairman, we did hear testimony in committee on this, and it sounded like there could be situations where there were delays in getting these people into treatment. With these delays in treatment, it was very difficult to keep that probationary period on them until they finished up their treatment. So that was the whole philosophy, or that was my understanding of what the meaning was behind this bill, was to keep those people in treatment that needed to finish up their program prior to being released. And it was my understanding that would be the only reason for this extension would be for that drug treatment program. Thank you.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out to the body, when it comes to extending probationary periods beyond the maximum possible incarceration period, this isn't a new concept. Might surprise you to know that I believe under DUI law, even first offense, the statute specifically says you can go up to 3 years on probation, even though on a first offense, the maximum penalty is 6 months incarceration. And the whole purpose is to keep people flying right for an extended period of time when it comes to beating an alcohol addiction or a drug addiction. So I suggest before you vote to think for some committee as a whole, you consider that. If you have some ideas for the main bill to make it better, you can certainly make it better.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Eichel?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I just wanted to confirm that that one of the points I did not make is that this has to do with when there are delays that can happen, and I neglected and forgot to mention that, that it allows for the person sometimes to be even be able to get into treatment, which then would keep them longer than the standard amount of time for what would be a penalty probation for the offense. I urge your support of this, and thank you.
Mr. Hinckley, will you be very long?
I don't mean to be rude, Mr. We have some
I guess no, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
I don't know if I made any sense the last time. I probably didn't. But I'm going to bring a second reading amendment. If you don't kill this on general file, I'll bring a second reading amendment that maybe might make this a little more palatable to me. Maybe on a subsequent offense or third offense, this could attach versus the first offense. So vote your conscience, but if this does pass committee of the whole, I will bring an amendment, again, to make it a little more palatable to myself.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Eichel?
I would like to remind the body that, to me, it doesn't matter whether it's the first offense or sixth offense. It's when there is a situation that requires some treatment to make this person be a responsible individual again. Thank you.
Any other discussion? You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, if you so with the recommendation that Senate File 173 be passed, please say aye. Excuse me, that is, we're going to be voting on Senate File 170. Try it again. All those in favor? All those opposed? Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Barnard, Berger, Bretzel, Brown, Buchanan, Childers, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Davison, Dirk, Edwards, Esquivel, Gay, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hageman, Hammond, Harshman, excuse, Harvey, Pastor, Hinckley, Eichel, Dillaway, Jackson, Jones, excused, Jorgensen, excused, Landon, Latta, Lockhart, excused, Lovenote, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Peterson, Filth, excused, Powers, Thorberg, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson. Simlet. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Excuse. Slater. Thompson. Walsh. Warren. Warren, excuse. Wasserberger. Watt. White. Swanager. Mr. Speaker. Edwards, excuse. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Illaway, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Landon, no to aye. Hageman, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Vote is closed. 24 ayes, 28 noes, 8 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, Senate File 170, having failed the roll call vote is indefinitely postponed. Representative Hageman.
Mr. Chairman, could I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce a bunch of young ladies. It's real estate candidates from Laramie County, and Bobby Gertz is their sponsor, the one that's the sponsor, and they're all sitting right up there, and they're the real estate candidates this year, and I'd like to have you welcome. Would you girls stand up?
We're sure proud of you, and welcome to the House. This was the reason I was trying to interrupt Representative Hinckley, so that you could see who we're so proud of in this county. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 173. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 173, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to crimes and offenses, assault upon corrections or detention officer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Landon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate File 173 do pass. Furthermore, I move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll explain that real rapidly. The first part of the amendment had to do with inserting contagious, because we were wanting to address contagious diseases in part of this. Then we deleted out whether or not the person that whom perhaps the offense was against was full-time or not, was not significant, so we deleted full-time. We deleted the references to the family services. We also deleted youth offenders as being falling under this penalty because youth tend to act impulsively sometimes, and we didn't feel like we wanted them to bring them under the penalties of this act. So unless there's any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I'd ask you the question, and then I'd like to hand the bill over.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Ready for the question? Question haven't been called. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I yield the floor to the good representative from Raleigh.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was brought to judiciary by the Department of Corrections. It's very similar to the bill that we passed out of this body last session, and I think the session before that, and it died in the Senate from lack of movement in the Judiciary Committee. But this time, the bill started in the Senate and made it this far, so most of you are familiar with it. This bill is needed to protect correctional officers. It's not a pretty subject, but it's a reality of life for correctional officers who need protection from HIV-positive inmates in both the men's and women's prisons. HIV continues to spread at a staggering national rate. Rhode Island, Arizona, South Dakota, Montana, Nevada, and Idaho all have this legislation. This bill will act as a deterrent and as protection for Wyoming correctional officers against contagious diseases. and make inmates think twice before they violate this law. I had a couple of these passed out. I don't know how many of you have read them. They're in your mailbox. If you've had a chance to look at them, it'll kind of give you an idea of the severity of the problem. Senate File 173 is an act relating to crimes and offenses creating the crime of assault and battery on a correctional or detention officer, providing penalties, providing definitions, and providing for an effective date. And you go down to 62508 and gives you the definition. A person is guilty of assault and battery on a correctional or detention officer if he reckless propels any dangerous substance at the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member. While the correction officer, detention officer, or staff member is acting in the course of his official duty, or as a result of the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member's official duty. If he tampers with or alters any item by contaminating the item with any dangerous substance, if the item may be handled or consumed by the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member while the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member is acting in the course of his official duty, or as a result of the correctional officer's detention, or the detention officer or the staff member's regular duty. A person is guilty of aggravated assault and battery on a correctional officer or detention officer if he intentionally or knowingly, and this is one of the keys to the bill, propels any dangerous substance at the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member while the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member is acting in the course of his official duties, or as a result of the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member's duty, or if he tampers with or alters any item by contaminating the item with any dangerous substance. If the item may be handled or consumed by the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member, while the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member is acting in the course of his official duty as a result of the correctional officer, detention officer, or staff member's official duty. And then on the bottom of page 3, starting with line 10, if you'll go down, that's the penalties violation. Penalty C, a violation of subsection A of this section is a misdemeanor, punishable by a fine of not more than $750, imprisonment for not more than 6 months. Then you go to D, it gets a little stronger every time. A violation of subsection B of this section is a felony, punishable by a fine of not more than $5,000, imprisonment for not more than 5 years, or both. A violation of subsection B of this section by a person who knows he has a life-threatening disease shall result in the enhancement of the sentence entered and on subsection B of this section by a period of imprisonment for not more than 10 years. And I'm not going to go, you can all read, and I'm not going to go down any farther into page 4, but that's basically the bill. And Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions.
Representative Alden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could the good representative from Clarendon County give me an example of one of these contagious assault issues?
Representative Hinckley. Are you ready?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just have a quick question for the bringer of the bill. Regarding life-threatening disease on the bottom of page 3, line 22, and in the Committee of the Whole amendment, was there any discussion
exactly how far that goes. I know it's a contagious, life-threatening disease, but I guess my comment would also be that I think hepatitis might not be a life-threatening disease, but I think it ought to fall under this as an aggravated penalty, because that's what we have to worry about with our correction officers, is the fact that you have somebody locked down in a cell, and I won't say it on the open mic, but the bodily fluids and things that they throw at the officers, it might not be life-threatening, but hepatitis can obviously do some pretty serious damage to one's system. So just a little discussion about that. I don't want to kill this, but maybe we need to have a better definition of that. And I'd like to hear from the bringer if I can, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bagby.
He's a representative from the southern part of the state. You're absolutely right. We probably need to address this hepatitis, because we'll probably overlook whether we're doing the bill, or we can come back with an amendment on second reading. But that's a good idea. Thank you for bringing that up. And as far as the representative from Platte County, an example of assault would be somebody that had a contagious disease and bit in a food tray. Or another example would be a fight and actually bit somebody, and this person knows that he has HIV and he actually draws blood on another inmate or a correctional officer. And some of the examples I've heard, some of the officers themselves are worried about getting bit in a fight or something. And HIV is contagious. And does that answer your question?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question possibly for some of our fine attorneys in the chamber here. Isn't doing any of these actions, wouldn't that be considered assault now, and it's punishable? How would these penalties be different? And also, I don't know why we're selecting out this group, and this can happen to people in society as a whole. And again, wouldn't the assault rules, assault charges apply here?
What's that, baby?
What they wanted was some stronger penalties, because correctional officers work within a contained area and they have to deal with this more. And it's not only a men's prison. You have these problems in a women's prison. And there was no deterrent. What they wanted was a deterrent to stop people from actually propelling substances. And they had to have a stronger penalty to act as a deterrent.
Representative Breckel.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the way it sounds is if a person has a contagious disease and he spits on somebody, then he is in fact in violation. But if he doesn't have a contagious disease and he spits on somebody, then it might not be. Follow up on that. It seems to me like in a prison they would in any detention facility that they would already have some things written in the rules. But I guess part of my concern is people being accused of something that maybe they may not be guilty of, and I guess I'd like to know that they do get due process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hinckley? Representative Landon, Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move first reading amendment, Committee of the Whole amendment to Senate File 173.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
The What this amendment does is it goes to page 3, where down at the bottom, there's language in there that says that a person who knows that they have a contagious, life-threatening disease shall, if a violation of this section shall result in the enhancement of the penalty. We talked about this in committee, but we didn't do anything about it, and we have an amendment that's actually brought through the LSO. If we don't add on there that whatever they throw or whatever at a correction officer isn't also of the nature of being contagious and life-threatening, then it's just simply an enhancement of penalty because of that person's circumstances. And that's thought to be unconstitutional because all people are have equal protection and due process rights. So this amendment would read that a violation of subsection B in this section by a person who knows he has a contagious, life-threatening disease and who commits the violation with the intent to infect the correction officer, detention officer, or staff member with a, and I would like to amend the amendment with the, it should say contagious, life-threatening disease. I'd like to amend the amendment by putting in contagious in front of life-threatening in the on line 6 of the amendment.
We're on committee of the whole amendment. All those in favor, is any other discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the committee of the whole amendment number 1, please say aye. Opposed, no. Amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make a couple comments. This is nasty business. There's no doubt about it. It's the correction facilities are difficult places to work in. This kind of activity where people are throwing stuff and at correction officers makes it just all the more miserable and dangerous. And the Department of Corrections and the director, having worked in these kind of facilities for a while and having had these kind of rules and found that they were quite effective in deterring this type of activity, has asked us to consider this. It's my understanding that at the other side of the hall they had a bill that was broad that just made this an assault for anybody, and that for some reason that didn't make it through that body, so they narrowed it down and just tried to protect this population of people who are working in these facilities, and that's what this bill is about.
Representative Miley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for my own information, do they require all the correctional officers to be immunized for hepatitis B?
Representative Bagby.
Dr. Miley, I think they do, but I can't positively say yes.
Representative Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't want to belabor this. I guess I got a little crabby this afternoon. The more I think about this, the little more uneasy I become. And I know that the bringer of this bill worked hard on this for the last couple of years since we came in as classmates. And I don't know if I relayed this story 2 years ago, but I've answered a good representative from Fremont County. The part of this bill that I'm having the toughest time with, I'll give you the story about me, is the fact that, I think I did say this 2 years ago, is the fact that convicted a guy who came to sentencing, to make a long story very short. As he's leaving the courtroom, he decided that he needed to spit on me and everybody else was at the table. And in the process of spitting on me, he spit in my ear, my eye, and my mouth. Now, assuming that he had a life-threatening contagious disease, you know, I don't know if we'd be able to stick him with our current aggravated assault and battery statute. I think it would just be a simple battery. I won't go into the legal machinations of why that would be.
And I'm a little uneasy the fact that this just doesn't apply to everybody across the board. And I see by the title of the bill that if we tried to change it, I'm sure somebody would jump up and say that it's outside the scope of the bill. But that part disturbs me. And by the way, I'm the first to admit this is a nasty, nasty business, the transport of these individuals and with the police and these correctional officers and probation officers have to deal with on a daily basis with some of these people is absolutely beyond reproach. And most of us don't even think about these things. You don't even see them in the movies. Some of these people are so bad. But at the same breath, I just have a real hard time not having this apply to everybody across the board. And again, using my situation, if it did, we could hammer this guy with something like this versus the current statute that would, I believe, only make it a misdemeanor offense against me versus everybody else on this floor. So I'm having some problems with it. So for the first time this session, I'm either on or against it at this point.
Chairman Landon, we have a technical point we need cleared up. Chairman Landon, you had asked for the word contagious be in the amendment, and we're not exactly sure whether you'd like that.
Your question is what now?
Chairman Landon, where would the word contagious be in that Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, on the last line there?
I would like the word contagious to be in the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one on line six, after the word the and before like.
Thank you, Chairman Lane. Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We heard surprisingly graphic testimony in committee about this bill. Which I won't share with my brothers and sisters of the 58th, other than to say, I'd be glad you weren't there. Our prisoners are coming back from out of state with an enhanced skill set, and there is very limited penalty for that skill set, thus the genesis of this bill. The committee talked about addressing Representative Hinckley's concern about making it apply to everyone, but exactly for the reasons that Representative Hinckley cited, that being that the amendment would be beyond the scope of the bill title, we chose not to do that this year. We think it's important that when somebody knowingly infects somebody else with a contagious life-threatening disease, that's an issue that we need to address as aggravated assault because it's tantamount to that. But we didn't want to kill this bill for the purposes of protecting certain people.
Representative Bagley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good representative just answered the question that I was going to talk to the representative from South Cheyenne, and that's the same thing I was going to say. So,
Representative Watt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a nasty, dirty subject, and this is a good bill about this nasty, dirty subject. We're talking about convicted felons who are confined to a correctional institution, assaulting correctional officers by using this nasty, dirty subject. They need added protection. There needs to be a penalty that has something to get their attention. Otherwise, our correctional officers are in danger, and I think we have a responsibility and an obligation to protect them. And so I would ask that you vote favorably on this bill.
Is there any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? The question being... Representative Ladd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the bill,
Again, I don't have a lot to add other than I think we need to address this with this bill, and I think we need to bring another bill. Our officers that are out on the street deal with this, I don't know how many times a day. Every time they stop somebody, they potentially deal with this. If you've ever gone out with them, the first thing they ask somebody is, when they get them out of the car, do you have anything in your pocket that will poke me or stick me? Because they're so afraid that somebody's going to have a syringe in their pocket. And if you go with them for more than a week or two, you will find people that have syringes in their pocket that are with the needle exposed and said they had nothing. They spit on them. They do other things on them that we can't talk about on this floor. And I would be remiss if I did not say that we need to pass this bill as well as do some more work on another bill that gives some protection to our officers on the street as they are the front line. We've talked about meth use, we've talked about all these things. These guys are on the front line, and it's happening to them every day, and they have to live with it every time they get in that car to go pull somebody over. They live with the fact that pulling somebody over for speeding can be, they open the car door and they get spit in their face. Folks, this is dangerous stuff. Let's pass this bill and let's move on. Let's get another bill going.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Gilmore.
Mr. Chair, this is just kind of an historical note on this bill. The goodly representative from Carbon County brought the original bill up several years ago, making this offense a misdemeanor. At the time, he was kind of subject to disdain and some ridicule. Now the implications are very evident, and I guess this is just, I just kind of wanted to applaud the good representative that started this originally.
Representative Hinckley?
Mr. Chairman, and please, I hope that for my good friend and colleague from Matrona County, I know some people spoke on this, there is in no way, shape, or form any ridicule brought towards my good friend from Carbon County, at least from this representative, and I just wanted the record to be clear.
Is there any further discussion? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation of Senate File 173 be passed, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 173 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 114. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 114, introduced by Senator Vasey, enacting relating to law enforcement retirement corrections officers.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Philp, are you available? Is there anybody that's going to cover for Chairman Philp? There's Chairman Philp. We're on Senate File 114.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, that it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 114 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Are you ready for questions? Question being called. Representative Miley.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this isn't our bill, but came from one of the from representatives in the House District 2. It's his bill, but the idea here, this. As I understand, this affects approximately 114 agents and supervisors in this bill, and as you can see, there is an appropriation of almost $2.5 million from the general fund to fund it.
Representative
Representative Dirks.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I apologize. I was back in the hall visiting about some other matters. So this is a bill that I signed on to early in the session. It's something that we've tried for the last couple of years. It's important to a lot of the people in the state, and maybe a representative from Albany County could lay it, could discuss more of the specifics of it. But again, I'm sorry I wasn't there.
Representative White.
Mr. Chairman, I can't add a whole lot more other than that this is just the probation and parole agents that are employed by the Wyoming Department of Corrections. And I guess I can't go into the details of the bill right now, but I would just say that these people deal with the worst of the worst, and I would ask for your support on this bill.
Representative McComey, is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Phillips' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 114 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 114 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 99. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 99, introduced by Senator Boggs, an act relating to the Wyoming Investment in the Nursing Loan and Grant Program.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that the Senate File 99 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I refer to the good representative from
Chairman Osborne, we do have a standing committee amendment to Senate File 99.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 99, I move that amendment. Representative Hinckley will be with you shortly.
Representative Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was still dealing with the assault on the correctional officer stuff. Mr. Chairman, members of the 58th, this looks like a pretty substantial amendment. It's really not. It just simply transfers power from the, and I'm going to screw this up, but it's the Wyoming Higher Education Assistance Authority to the Community College Commission. The Community College Commission is the one dealing with this. They've been doing it. They've got the infrastructure set up. They've got the money to do it. Everybody that in the Educational Assistance Authority and the Community College Commission agrees this should be an appropriate transfer on the Standing Committee Amendment. So if there aren't any other questions regarding the Standing Committee Amendment, I would call for a question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 58th, if you would just turn to page 2, you can see probably at least the meat of this bill regarding the preference that would be given to a registered nurse teaching at the University of Wyoming or Wyoming College, and that the registered nurse accepted into a nursing education program. And then at the lower part of page 2, pages 20 through 24, this is a change. In essence, the reason for the change is that if we are full at the University of Wyoming or our community colleges regarding the nursing program, this allows somebody that wants to actually go into nursing, as you can see down there at the bottom of page 2, and isn't accepted in the program for whatever reason, and they're accepted into an accredited nursing education program at a university located outside the state, the loans awarded for that applicant will not exceed, so let's be clear, so if you go to a university in the state south of us and it actually costs $20,000 a year to go into the nursing program, where only it costs $10,000 a year to go here in our great state of Wyoming, the person that goes to Colorado will only get 10 grand. They're not going to get 20 to attend the college down in Colorado. But I think it strengthens the intent of this bill to get more nurses
back into the state of Wyoming. Because if our program is full, we want them to go get the nursing education, at the same time still have the ability to get the money. This also applies, by the way, if you go to page 3, regarding the master's and the PhD program. And I think you can read that on your own, but I think this strengthens our nursing loan program.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Osborne's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with recommendation that bill, that Senate File 99 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 99 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Motion has failed. Just kidding. Just kidding. Reading clerk will read the journal committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, amended, recommended do pass. Senate Joint Resolution Number 5, recommended do pass. Senate File 132, recommended do pass. Senate File 64, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 170, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate File 173, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 114, recommended do pass. Senate File 99, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the report. What is your pleasure, Representative Samuelson?
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. Your report is adopted. That's for that note, right? Thank you. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 377. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 144, State Library Board repeal. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 378. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 39, Child Protection Amendments. The Senate failed to concur on the House amendments to the bills as to above by the vote indicated, ayes 30, the Senate requests the House to appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a live committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 379. Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the joint conference committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Senate File 82, Workers' Compensation Amendments, ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 380. Mr. Speaker, the bills list below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 23, Public Ethics Act, ayes 28, no 2. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 381. Mr. Speaker, the bills list below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 60, Minor Victims Release of Names, ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 382. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 65, Uniform Trust Code Amendment. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as followed by the vote indicated, ayes 30, no 0. Signed, the Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 383. Mr. Speaker. House Bill 94, Environmental Health Study of the House, listed above, passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated ayes 30, no, 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message 385, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 275, Methamphetamine Initiative Planning Study. The Senate respectfully, the House listed above, passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated, ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 386, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, House Bill 333, Publication of Municipal Ordinances, ayes 30, no, 0, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 387, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 293, Illegal Drug Manufacturing Precursor Chemicals. The House bill listed above passed the Senate on third reading in amended form as followed by the vote indicated, ayes 27, noes 3. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendment, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 388, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated, House Bill 345, Incentives for Mineral Exploration, ayes 12, noes 18. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 389. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed conferees to meet with the Life Committee Number 1 from the House on amendments to Senate File 39. The Senate conferees are Senator Haynes, Chairman, Senator Scott, Senator Sessions. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 390. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 165, Open Meeting Laws. The Senate failed to adopt the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated, ayes 0, noes 29, excused 1. The Senate requests the House to appoint a new conference committee to meet with the Life Committee from the Senate. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Reading Clerk. Members of the House, just for your knowledge for the rest of the day, there are a couple of committees that have some pretty big workloads, so I'm going to curtail what would normally happen. We will do the reports in standing committees, so if we have any re-referrals, we can get those done. There are some concurrences on your desk. We'll take care of those. And then we'll only do the signing of the enrolled acts, the Senate ones, so that those bills will have both signatures on, so they can go immediately to the governor for his consideration. And then we'll call it a day. So that'll shorten it a little bit. So reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1 on Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 135, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that we do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Alden, Bakery, Buchanan, Landon, Lubnow, Olson, Robinson, Watt, White. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Reading Clerk. Are there any re-referrals? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I request re-referral of Senate File 135 to Appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 135 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Thank you. Now in that order of business of request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number 382. It deals with House Bill 65. And that would be Chairman Landon. And Chairman Osborne, you're on deck for the next three. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence with message number 382 concerning House Bill 65 and urge your aye vote. There were two changes made to the House Committee concerning Uniform Trust Code Amendments. One of them was a technical correction on page 4, line 13. The second one was on page 13, line 18, where they brought in some of the statute that hadn't been in before, and they more clearly defined how public notice should be published at once per week for two consecutive weeks.
Is there any further discussion? We are voting on whether to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 65. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Barnard, Berger, Pretzel, Brown, Buchanan, Newell, Childers, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Davison, Dirks, Edwards, Hughes, Esquivel, Gay, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hageman, Hammonds, Harshman, excused, Harvey, Pastert, Hinckley, Eichel, Dillaway, Jackson, Jones, excused, Jorgensen, excused, Landon, Latta, Lockhart, excused, Lubnow, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Henderson, Peterson, Philp, Hughes, Powers, Forberg, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlett, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, excused, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, excused, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Zwanisser, Mr. Speaker, Latta, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Vote is closed. 51 ayes, 9 excused.
Thank you, Madam Chief Clerk. By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 65. Next message for our consideration is message number 383, dealing with Senate amendments to House Bill 94, the Environmental Health Study. Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence with message 383, House Bill 94, Environmental Health Study. This is simply two grammatical corrections. On page 2, delete a comma and insert and on page 3, delete each and insert the. I ask for your concurrence.
We are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 94. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Barnard, Berger, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Newell, Childers, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Davison, Dirks, Edwards, excused, Esquivel, Gay, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hageman, Hammonds, Harshman, excused, Harvey, Pastert, Hinckley, Eichel, Dillaway, Jackson, Jones, excused, Jorgensen, excused, Landon, Latta, excused, Lockhart, excused, Lubnow, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Henderson, Peterson, Philp, excused, Powers, Forberg, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlett, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, excused, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, excused, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Wanitzer, Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Vote is closed. 51 ayes, 9 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 94. Next message for our consideration is message number 385, dealing with House Bill 275. Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence with message number 385, House Bill 275, Methamphetamine Initiative Planning Study. The Senate inserted employed in Wyoming and elsewhere in terms of looking at the current state-of-the-art of treatment of meth. And the the Appropriations Committee on the Senate side cut the cost of the study in half from $100,000 to $50,000. Our Department of Health says they can do it for that, so I move concurrence and urge you to vote aye on this message.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, we are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 275. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Halden, Anderson, Bagby, Barnard, Berger, Brestel, Brown, Buchanan, Buell, Childers, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Davison, Zirk, Edwards, excused, Esquivel, Day, Gilmore, Gingrich, Goggles, Hageman, Hammond, Harshman, excused, Harvey, Pastor, Hinckley, Eichel, Illaway, Jackson, Jones, excused, Jorgensen, excused, Landon, Latta, excused, Lockhart, excused, Lubnow, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne,
aye.
Pedersen, Peterson, Filch, excused, Powers, Forbert, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlett, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, excused, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, excused, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Zwanitzer, Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Vote is closed. 51 ayes, 9 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 275. Next message for our consideration is message number 387, dealing with Senate amendments to House Bill 293. Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message 387, House Bill 293, illegal drug manufacturing precursor chemicals, and ask you to vote no. Senate has made several substantial changes to the bill, and we would like the opportunity to go visit with them about that. So I ask for your nay vote on 387.
Is there any further discussion? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 293. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Halden, Anderson, Bagby, Barnard, Berger, Brestel, Brown, Buchanan, Buell, Childers, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Davison, Dirt, Edwards, excused, Esquivel, Day, Gilmore, Gingrich, Goggles, Hageman, Hammond, Harshman, excused, Harvey, Pastor, Hinckley, Eichel, Illaway, Jackson, Jones, excused, Jorgensen, excused, Landon, Latta, excused, Lockhart, excused, Lubnow, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Pedersen, Peterson, Filth, excused, Powers, Forbert, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlett, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, excused, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, excused, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Zwanitzer, Mr. Speaker. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Mr. Minority Floor Leader, would you clarify your vote, please? Aye. Are there any changes? Vote is closed. Gilmore? No to aye. Are there any other changes? Vote is closed. 2 ayes, 49 noes, 9 excused.
By your vote, you have voted not to concur with Senate Amendment Staff's Bill 293. Conference Committee will be selected probably tomorrow. Reading and signing of enrolled acts. First enrolled act for our consideration is Senate Enrolled Act Number 59.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 59, being original Senate File 23, an act relating to health care education.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 59, being original Senate File Number 23. I have so signed. Next enrolled act is 60.
Senate Bill Act Number 60, being original Senate File Number 103, an act relating to gasoline taxes.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 60, being original Senate File 103. I have so signed. Next enrolled act is 61.
Senate Bill Act Number 61, being original Senate File Number 47, an act relating to school finance dealing with full-day kindergarten programs and the summer school grant programs.
I'm about to sign the Senate Enrolled Act Number 61, being original Senate File 47. I have so signed. Next Enrolled Act is 62.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 62, being original Senate File Number 78, an act relating to insurance regarding policy cancellation or premium increases.
About to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 62, being original Senate File 78. I have so signed. Conference committees. Conference Committee 4, Senate File 39, Child Protection Amendments, Landon Chair, Barnard, Gingrich. Conference Committee for Senate File 14, Berger Chair, Edwards, Latta. Conference Committee for Senate File 8, the Open Container Law, Landon Chair, Samuelson, and Warren. And that last appointment will somewhat depend on the ability of Representative Warren to also do the Conference Committee. So there may be on the budget. So there may be a change on that. I just haven't had a chance to talk. Committee announcements. Chairman Elway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Thursday, tomorrow, in House 18 at noon, and we will talk about Senate File 14 engrossed, that's Senate File 140 engrossed, hospital district trustees, and then at 12:15 we'll discuss interim topics with the Senate committee, Senate Corporation.
Thank you, Chairman Elway. Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Select Water will meet in the Senate Ag on adjournment.
Representative Anderson, before you meet with them, would you come see me? Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10 on Labor, Health, and Social Services will meet immediately upon adjournment today in H-17 to consider 6 bills. Senate File 143, Physicians Requirement for Licensure. Senate File 100, Welfare Benefits Eligibility, Senate File 133, Immunizations Administration by Pharmacists, Senate File 166, State Drug Wholesaler, Senate File 93, Nurse Practice Act Amendments, and Senate File 113, Medical Safety Event Reporting.
Thank you, Chairman Osborne. Chairman Hageman.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5 on Agriculture will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock for discussion of interim projects. It was going to be a meeting of just the House members, but the Senate has agreed to meet with us, so it'll be a joint committee on interim subjects at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning up here in our ag room.
Thank you, Chairman Hageman. Chairman Wasserberger.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, committee number four, will meet today upon adjournment in H-10 to consider the following bills. Senate File 122, Engrossed Higher Education Endowments Account. Senate File 131, Engrossed School Facilities Land Disposition. And also on Monday, February 28th at noon, we will meet with the Senate to consider interim topics, and that site will be named at a later date.
Thank you, Chairman Wasserberger. Any other committee announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. General file for tomorrow. Senate File 92. Senate File 58. Senate File 24. Senate File 154. Senate File 19. Senate File 65. Senate File 119. Senate File 41. Senate File 88. Senate File 130, and other bills that we may get around to should time allow. And Mr. Speaker, I move that we adjourn until tomorrow, Thursday, February 24th at 10 a.m.
Representative Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Legislative prayer breakfast reminder tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. at the Hitching Post. Hope to see you there.
Any other announcements? The motion is to adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed say no. Motion carries. The House is adjourned till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.